I said smoothly. But my brain was saying, north? Which way is north? But then I remembered where the sun had set, so that was west. I drove at 2 miles per hour to the edge of the uncut wheat. I engaged the separator by pushing the button down and up. Then I engaged the header button, which was located right beside the main drive, both yellow buttons that you pushed down and forward. I wasn't even sure what all these buttons were for. I just did what my dad had taught me. Once everything was engaged and running, the combine vibrated, and I knew something big was happening. I then lowered the header with a right-hand control. Next, I pushed the hydro handle, and a hydraulic propulsion motor moved the machine forward. It made it very easy to slowly push the lever to the right just a tad, and then forward. I could have pushed farther forward for a faster speed, but I was too scared. I kept my left hand on the steering wheel and my right hand on the header's height control button. Like I said earlier, the field was terraced. I had to be very sensitive to the ground. It was kind of like when you're walking and you automatically adjust your feet with each step. My queasiness was gone, and I felt more alert than I'd ever felt. It was like all my senses were amped. I could even smell better, my nostrils filling with the scent of wheat. I pushed the lever up to 4 miles per hour.
"Don't go too fast," Mick's voice boomed over the radio.
I was feeling annoyed with Mick and didn't answer him. He was just a negative person. But I did feel a little out of control, so I slowed back down to 2 miles per hour. Even safe in the cab and slathered with DEET, I was worried about mosquitoes. They had an amazing sense of smell. But then I thought how they could fly only 1 or 1.5 miles an hour. So if they were chasing me, they couldn't catch me in the combine. That was probably illogical, but it made me feel better. It wasn't a fair fight because they could use senses scientists didn't even understand. They could see a hot body, smell my sweat, and smell my exhaled breath from 100 feet away, all of which got them really excited. And take it from me, you don't want to get a mosquito excited. Now I felt a strange pressure all over my body, and the pressure on my inside seemed so intense that my chest hurt. Something started squeezing my heart and lungs. Who ever heard of a 12-year-old girl having a heart attack? I knew I wasn't having one, but my chest did hurt, and I thought for a moment that maybe it was a rare young girl heart attack. I remembered Oba-chan saying pressure was the most powerful force in the world. I had a lot of pressure on me and in me. After driving for 5 minutes, I idled the combine to calm down. The control panel said the bin was at 40% capacity, just a little more than what Ji-chan had filled the bin with. If I went 2 miles an hour and cut 7.5 acres an hour, then... Ugh, I couldn't figure it out just now. Anyway, who cared? Just drive. I began driving again. I could feel my insides warm up, like I had just drunk hot apple cider. It was only me, driving a combine on my own. And it was working. Dust filled the air, and I turned on the windshield wipers. I put my whole attention, everything I had, on what I was doing. The only other time I had ever focused this much was when I was holding Jazz still during one of his outbursts. I was doing good. I knew it. I couldn't see Mick because of the dust, but then he suddenly appeared out of nowhere and we passed each other going in opposite directions. The controls said the combine was filling. When I reached 50%, it kind of seemed like a miracle. I happily watched the header turn around and around as it cut. Time seemed to be moving so slowly. I could walk faster than 2 miles per hour. It was taking forever for the combine to fill. But the readout said it was getting fuller. Then, finally, unbelievably, it was full. I raised the header. The combine could turn on a dime. I made a U-turn and headed for the big rig. I pulled up close to it and pressed the auger out button to release the auger. As the controls indicated that my combine was emptying, I leaned back and closed my eyes. I felt so gratified and excited. Me, Summer. I was doing this.
I leaned over and hugged Thunder. Suddenly, Mick cried out over the radio, "Summer, you're missing the trailer. Stop dumping." "What?" I jabbed the button to stop the dumping, then scrambled onto the platform. No, it couldn't be. I was paralyzed with panic. There was a pile of wheat on the ground. I couldn't think what I should do besides stand there and stare. When my brain started working again, I rushed into the cab and brought in the auger. I leaned over the steering wheel to compose myself. I was here. Now. And I couldn't escape. I had pulled up my combine a few inches too short of the grain trailer. I didn't want to go out and see exactly how much wheat I had spilled. I didn't want to, but I had to. Obachan, the Parkers, Mick, Mr. Franklin, they would all be furious at me. And Ji-chan would be very disappointed. Then I remembered Ji-chan's advice. If you ever do something bad, you have to try to hurry through it, get it over with. I turned off the ignition, grabbed the flashlight, and pushed open the door. I paused to enjoy one more second of not seeing up close what I had done. Then I descended a couple of steps down the ladder and jumped down the rest of the way, Thunder following. I could smell the cut wheat. Ordinarily, that would be a good smell, except now what I was smelling was spilled wheat, wheat I had let fall to the ground. I kept thinking over and over that I couldn't escape. Then I saw it, a mountain of wheat on the ground. I leaned against the combine, pushing back tears, then climbed quickly back into the cab and picked up the radio. Mick? What, Summer? It's terrible, I said. There's so much wheat on the ground. My voice sounded squeaky. Be right there. I rushed down again. The combine's headlights lit up the night, cutting sharp shadows into the field. The pile of fallen wheat seemed to be taunting me. I wished I could hurry through this, but at the moment there was nothing to do. I stared at the pile. It looked like about 20 or 30 bushels. The farmer would blow a gasket if he saw his precious wheat spilled. He spent the entire year working toward this moment. When Mick reached me, he quickly assessed the situation. "Looks like about 60 bushels," he said. "It was even worse than I'd thought." "I have to lie down for a second," I said. I lay in the fetal position. In the scheme of things, this wasn't so bad, was it? Wars were worse. Getting hurt was worse. Malaria was worse. I closed my eyes. I didn't want to see anything. I tried to concentrate on not seeing the usual mess of shapes in my head. I just wanted darkness and peace. Instead, I saw the header turning through the wheat. I could hear its roar as well. It almost felt as if I would never see or hear anything else. I pushed myself up and waited for Mick to tell me how stupid I was. He said crisply, "Not to worry, not to worry. I'll get the shovel from the pickup. All I need to do is shovel the wheat onto the header and turn on the combine, but we'll have to pick up the rest by hand. That's what'll take the time." He stared at the spilled wheat for a second before repeating, "That's what'll take the time." He jogged toward the pickup but stopped to call out, "You'll move the header closer to the wheat." I grunted as I pushed and lifted Thunder up to the combine's platform. I didn't want him loose where he might get caught in the header. I climbed up after him and backed up the combine so the header was closer to the spilled grain. When I turned off the combine again, I just sat up there as Mick plunged the shovel into the wheat again and again and again. I wished there were some sand around so I could stick my head under it. My life just stank, totally and completely. I was nothing but a nuisance. I leaned my head against the side window, and an overwhelming feeling of loneliness washed over me. Then I suddenly thought about Jazz, and I wondered if this was how lonely he felt almost all the time. That thought made me feel like throwing up. I saw the stars, the sliver of the moon, and I thought wearily that tomorrow night I would be needed again.
"Rise to the occasion," my father sometimes shouted at an athlete on TV.
That's what I had to do. Mick stopped shoveling and signaled me to turn on the header. I complied, and then I turned off the combine as he started shoveling again. We did this over and over. I eagerly clambered down to see if all the wheat was gone. I was pretty disappointed. There was still a very visible amount of wheat on the ground. The trailer was parked on a grassy area. It would have been better if the spill had happened in an area filled with cut straw. That way the wheat that remained on the ground wouldn't be so visible. The grains of wheat were about the size of grains of rice. The wheat looked terrible lying there in the grass. Mr. Franklin would be furious. Mick kicked angrily at the ground and muttered something under his breath.
"We've got 3/4 of it up. We'll have to leave this for now," he then said to me. "The time that it'll take to pick up the rest is better spent driving the combines. We need to maximize the amount of wheat we can save for Franklin. Look, the trailer will be almost full by the time I dump my load. I was almost full when I called you. So let me dump, and then we'll clean the combines and call it a night. I'm too banjaxed to keep cutting."
Mick ran a hand through his hair.
"Ah, I'll clean yours as well, or maybe I'll skip it. Why don't you go back to the motel?"
He didn't seem annoyed with me, I realized with relief.
"Thank you," I said. "It's all my job. Still, thank you. Good night." I couldn't believe he didn't want to kill me.
"Summer, don't worry," he said kindly. "You did a decent job cutting."
I watched him walk back to his combine and then honk twice, though who would be out there this time of night I didn't know. I wondered how much longer Mick would be up working. It seemed like 1,000 years ago that I had thought he was a negative person. Now I wished he was my big brother. As I walked back to the motel, the town was silent, the highway empty. Thunder ran back and forth across the road. I felt much more confident with the flashlight, and I broke into a jog. When I reached the motel office, I could see that a television was on somewhere inside. I could hear a humming noise from the fluorescent lights by the vending machines. I bought water, and I sat on the curb for a moment with Thunder, laying my head on my knees and crying. I cried because I was relieved the night was over, and also because I knew I had to go back out there tomorrow and run the combine again. Chapter 15. I slipped quietly into our room and took a shower, not just to clean myself, but to wash the pressure out from inside me. Showers had a way of doing that, of washing you inside and out. When I got out of the shower, I just about went to pieces. My left leg itched. I reached down to scratch and felt a mosquito bite. A mosquito bite. It took all of my willpower not to start screaming. I squatted down to peer at the bite and had the strangest thought. I remembered that it had taken a couple of weeks after the bite that gave me malaria to start feeling sick. So even if this mosquito bite I had now really was from an infected mosquito, which was pretty close to impossible, I'd still have time to work the combine for Jichon tomorrow and finish up this job with Mick before it was too late. But I didn't want to think about tomorrow. I opened the bathroom door and climbed in bed next to Jazz, pulling the sheet over my head for a mosquito net.
"Oba-chan," I said softly.
"What do you want?"
"Nothing."
Had I woken her up? Or did she really never sleep? Then somehow it was light out and I was alone in the room. Where was everybody? I checked the clock. It was 10 already. Had I just dreamed the previous night or had it really happened? Oba-chan had let me sleep in. I lay in bed, thinking, trying to figure it all out. There was Oba-chan the ogre. And there was Oba-chan who let me sleep late. There was Oba-chan who scolded me night and day, and there was Oba-chan who did as much of the cooking as she could, despite her pain, so I wouldn't have to. There was Oba-chan who supposedly lived at the hospital when I was sick, and there was Oba-chan who taunted me for, well, for everything. I mean, there was only one me, One Jazz, one Mom, one Dad, and one Ji-chan. But it seemed like there were two Oba-chans, the good one and the bad one. I got up, slathered on DEET, and pulled on my only long-sleeve shirt and a pair of jeans. I wanted as much of my body covered as possible, even though most mosquitoes were nocturnal. Then I grabbed some $1 bills from my purse for the vending machine. When I stepped outside, the heat hit me hard. Jazz and a boy I'd never seen were sitting in the shade doing something. It looked like arranging gravel. I bought iced tea and trail mix at the vending machines and eagerly tore open the trail mix. Blech. It tasted just as old as the one I'd eaten before. I sat down next to Jazz. How is Ji-chan? I asked. Same, Jazz said without looking at me. He was studying a single piece of gravel. For whatever crazy reason, he rejected it and chose another. He placed the new piece into the arrangement they were making. The arrangement looked like lace. Perfect lace. You mean he's still really sick? Maybe a little better. Then Jazz lifted his head and evaluated me like a detective. Something's fishy, he said. What are you up to? What? Then he lost interest in me and turned back to his gravel. What did they say? I asked. Who? Jazz held up a piece of gravel for his companion to inspect. What do you think? The other boy looked up, but he didn't glance my way. He watched Jazz set the piece into the lace. Cool, he said. Oba-chan and Ji-chan, what did they say? What do you mean? Say when? About me sleeping so late or about anything? Nothing. I looked really closely at the lace. It was gorgeous, like something you would see in Queen Elizabeth's room. Where is Oba-chan? She's riding with Ji-chan because he's still sick or she's at the elevator, Jazz said impatiently. He wanted to concentrate on his gravel. The other boy just stared at the ground, too. I knew that Oba-chan's back would hurt even more than usual tonight because of how uncomfortable the passenger seat was in the combine. And they had no real food. I squinted toward the sky. There were clouds gathering, but they weren't yet rain clouds. Since Ji-chan was still sick, I definitely would be needed again tonight. I tried to figure out how that made me feel, and it came to me. Determined. I imagined going 3 miles per hour, even 4. But actually, I didn't want to go faster. 2 was fine. That's pretty, I told Jazz, pointing to the arrangement. He squinted at me with scorn, either because I was bothering him or because he didn't like me calling his work pretty. He returned to his project. The amazing thing was how even the spaces were, how perfect the curves. It was really beautiful. A touch of envy rose inside me. He was so, so good at things. Ridiculous things, maybe, but couldn't he transfer that perfectionism to anything he wanted when he grew up? And who was this other boy? I could hardly tell the difference between his work and Jazz's. And they'd found each other in a small town in Oklahoma. That reminded me of something Ji-chan had once said.
You'll find the magic everywhere, in the wheat field, in mosquito, even here.
When he'd said that, we were driving through the town of Lost Springs, Wyoming, which had a population of 4. Jazz and I were making fun of it, and Ji-chan had cautioned us to stop laughing.
Don't make fun. You don't know what the magic here. Maybe a bad magic, maybe good.
Do you get an endorphin rush doing that? I asked Jazz. Remember endorphins from Oba-chan's acupuncture? We'd once gone to Wichita with her to get acupuncture for her back, and the acupuncturist had said that when the needles were placed just right, you got a rush of something inside you that made you feel good. That something was called endorphins. I remember, he said, as if annoyed that I was still there. What does gravel have to do with endorphins? I leaned back again. The pattern was about 4 feet long by 2 feet wide. But what was its purpose?
Shoot, if I could make a lace pattern like that, well, I wouldn't be wasting my time making a lace pattern like that. I'd be doing something, not sure exactly what. Jazz looked at the intricate arrangement one last time and stood up. Then, with his foot, he wiped away the gravel. That startled me. All that work destroyed in an instant. Come on, he said to the boy. They walked away, then the two of them stood facing the door to our motel room. I don't have a key, Jazz said to me. I held up mine, and he came and got it without speaking. The boys went inside the room. Obviously, they didn't want me in their little gravel arranging club. I decided to try to make some lace of my own. I know I had just gotten through saying it was a waste of time, but I wanted to see if I could do it. Though there was no physical exertion involved, soon I was sweating profusely. It was like working my brain was causing me to sweat. I got really involved with making the lace. It was so hard for me to make my lines perfect, and when I stepped away, I saw how uneven it all was. After a while, I bought a bottle of water from the machine and said to Thunder, "Water." He stretched his neck and opened his mouth as I poured in a small amount at a time. He was as much of a genius as Jazz was, just in a different way. I sat back down. I was going to make beautiful lace. If I could drive a combine, I could do this. For hours, I sat there arranging the gravel into lace, occasionally stopping to eat stale trail mix, drink iced tea, and give Thunder water. By 2 p.m., my t-shirt was soaked and my hair was matted with perspiration. Thunder was panting, and my lace still didn't look half as good as Jazz's. My back ached from leaning over. I lay down and stared at the awning above me. I could really see why Oba-chan liked to lie down flat on her back. It felt great. Thunder got up and put his nose on my face to make sure I was okay. I'm a failure at arranging gravel, I told him. He licked my face. I give up. I pushed myself up with a groan and went to the door to our room. When I knocked, Jazz didn't answer. I knocked harder. The door opened, and on the floor were a bunch of Legos arranged into a lace pattern. With the boys hard at work, my mind wandered back to a separate piece, to how Finny had died. The weird thing about dying is that while you're doing it, you're not afraid of it, but the second you're not doing it, you're scared of it again. So did that mean it was scary or not scary? I started reading the book again. An hour later, the door opened and Oba-chan and Ji-chan walked in.
"We having dinner now," she said.
The clock read 3:07 p.m.
"We starving."
Ji-chan lay down in the bed. Apparently, he wasn't joining us. Jazz turned to his friend. "Wanna come?" "Sure." "Don't you have to ask your mother or something?" I said to the boy. He looked maybe a year younger than Jazz, with dark hair and faded blue eyes. "She's cutting today. So is my dad." Mick was waiting outside, and we all went to the front desk to get a restaurant recommendation. They said I should talk to the desk clerk because I spoke American English the best. Miss talk so good. I went into the empty office and leaned on the counter. "Hello?" I called. Nobody answered, so I gave the desk bell a short tingle. When nobody came, I gave it a firmer ring. An older man walked in, looking almost confused. It was possible he hadn't talked to anyone all day. "We were wondering if you could give us a restaurant recommendation." He looked as if he was thinking. Finally, he said,
"There's not that much to choose from. I guess Monty's is best. It has decent food for the money."
That wasn't much of an endorsement, but if that was the best place in town, so be it. He told me where Monty's was, and we drove in the pickup to the other side of town. Monty's was a buffet, fajitas and meatloaf and macaroni and cheese, among other entrees. The macaroni and cheese looked like it was dry on the outside, so I took the fajitas. I knew you couldn't go wrong with fajitas. All you had to do was fry up some meat and vegetables. Well, the fajitas tasted awful. I wouldn't even know what to do to make fajitas taste that bad.
It was almost like the person who cooked it must have had a special talent for bad cooking. There were some kind of crazy spices involved that I wasn't familiar with, but they didn't fit together. It was kind of like putting salt into iced tea or something. Spices just didn't make sense. The cost was $7.99 per person. So far, it didn't seem worth it. On the other hand, it was slightly better than the trail mix, and it did stop my hunger pangs. "How's the mac and cheese?" I asked Jazz. He didn't answer, because sometimes when Jazz was eating, he didn't hear you. He was focusing too hard on his food. "The mac and cheese," I said again. "How is it?" "I'm thinking," he said. "I can't find the words."
"This not food," Oba-chan said.
"What is it?" I asked.
"I don't know," she replied. "Let's see. It not plastic. It not clay. It not mud. It not wax."
She looked at me.
"You ask a good question. I need to think about."
"I've been thinking," said Jazz's friend. "Maybe we should try to build the Eiffel Tower with your Legos." "Good idea," Jazz said. I decided to clean my plate because I knew it would be a long night. Also, I had been on Harvest before, so I knew you just had to eat your restaurant food and accept it. Mick was mostly quiet. The Irish guys talked more when they were all together. They were kind of shy that way. Then I thought about it and realized that we didn't talk much in front of the Parkers either. It's hard to have a big conversation with people who are in charge of you 16 hours a day. As always, Oba-chan was eating with her whole fist wrapped around her fork. Ji-chan always ate that way, too. I thought I'd try it now, and I discovered it was easier for me to eat that way than the proper way. Then Oba-chan's gaze fell on me. Her mouth opened, but before she could say anything, I started to hold the fork the right way. She closed her mouth and returned to her food. After we finished, we stepped out into the warm air. Mick said, "I suppose I'm only going to feel the hot side of America, aren't I?"
"Very hot on the Harvest," Oba-chan said politely. She was carrying leftovers home for Ji-chan.
Oba-chan dropped Mick at the farm, then drove us to the motel.
"Tomorrow I go to store and make a sandwich for Mick," Oba-chan said.
On the TV was a show about cooking fancy food. It had absolutely no relevance at all to how we cooked on Harvest. The cook lady was neatly arranging food on a platter. The boys seemed fascinated, so I didn't change the channel. I heard Ji-chan and Oba-chan talking quietly together. Then Oba-chan announced,
"Now I know what they feed at the restaurant. Your Ji-chan explain. When you put a hate in food you cook, person who eat die. When you put a love, person stronger. Mr. Monty put apathy into his food. I learn a new word today, apathy. I think maybe Mr. Monty put 2 or 3 apathy in his food."
Once Ji-chan fell asleep, Oba-chan set off back to the fields to drive the semi to the elevator. I so wanted to work the combine now, instead of spending time cooped up in a musty motel room. But Oba-chan would kill me so bad if she knew I'd driven last night, and she would kill me even worse if she knew I'd dropped a mountain of wheat. So I had no choice but to sneak out again late tonight after everyone else was asleep. When the boys lost interest in the cooking channel, they got busy with their Eiffel Tower project. To start, the other boy drew a picture of the tower. It wasn't museum quality, but it was pretty darn good. Then the boys stared at the picture as if they were meditating. The other boy even closed his eyes, maybe picturing the tower in his mind. I wished we could take him home with us. Jazz would never be lonely again. They focused intently on their tower, occasionally discussing technical details. Finally, around 9 p.m., the other boy said,
"I better get back. My parents should be coming in around now. See you tomorrow."
"Sure," Jazz said. They high-fived each other. I stood outside to make sure the boy got to his room okay. "What's his name?" I asked Jazz when I got back in.
"I don't know,"
You spent all that time with him, and you don't know his name?
It didn't come up.
Well, did he ask you your name? I asked.
Like I said, it didn't come up.
But finding out someone's name is one of the first things you do when you meet.
Says who?
I just looked at him for another moment, and then gave up. It was none of my business how we made friends. Oba-chan returned in a couple of hours and immediately lay on the floor. I did a double take when I saw a tear slide down the side of her face. Or was it perspiration? Oba-chan, are you okay? I asked.
No bothering me, she answered sharply. Go to sleep before I ground you.
What would you ground me for? She didn't answer, which wasn't like her. I felt really kind of disturbed by that teardrop, if it was a teardrop. I didn't understand what was going on. I took all my books and binders into the bathroom at once, but I didn't open any of them. I stayed in there for what seemed like a long, long time, brushing the knots out of my hair, trimming my toenails, anything I could think of to pass the time. I spread on yet more DEET, even though by doing so I broke a number of the EPA's rules for DEET, as usual. Here are the rules I broke. Read and follow all directions and precautions on this product label. Use just enough repellent to cover exposed skin and/or clothing. Do not use under clothing. Avoid overapplication of this product. Do not spray in enclosed areas. And later, I would break this one. After returning indoors, wash treated skin with soap and water. Hopefully, I would stop being scared of mosquitoes before I perished from DEET exposure. Anyway, about 20 minutes after I heard the TV go off, I tiptoed into the room. Jazz? No answer. Ji-chan? No answer. Oba-chan? Not even a grunt. Making sure I had my key card and the flashlight, I slipped out the door with thunder. Chapter 16. The walk sure was less scary with the flashlight. When I climbed into my combine, I immediately picked up the radio. I'm here, I said to Mick. Summer? Was all he said.
Yep, it's me.
Be careful when you dump tonight.
I will. Mick?
Yes?
Thank you for helping me yesterday.
And in my head, I was also apologizing to him for not liking him before and wishing he had fallen out of a truck.
It was nothing.
Thunder lay squished at my feet as I honked twice and started the combine. I started to feel like we were in our own world. I felt safe, the way Jazz felt safe in his bed at home. He loved his bed. I knew this because he kept all his important possessions on the shelf in his headboard at home. He kept a key from when we had lived in another house he liked better. He kept his completed Sudoku books, and he kept a box of his favorite Lego minifigs. I suddenly realized I was thinking about something else and operating the combine at the same time. According to my controls, the moisture content of the wheat was 11.5%, still perfect. Thunder whimpered in a dream. Mick was wrapped in dust on the far end of the field. I could drive confidently at 2 miles per hour, but when I tried 3, everything seemed barely under control. 2 was good. When I needed to pee, I stopped the combine and slipped into an area facing the empty highway. When I got back, Mick was on the radio.
Everything all right?
Yes, I replied. Then I added, 10-4, because I had learned that from a movie. I pushed yesterday's mistake out of my mind. Like Ji-chan sometimes said to Jazz when Jazz got stuck on something,
walk on, walk on.
And at least it seemed as though the farmer hadn't noticed. The bin was empty when I started. I drove slowly, sometimes even more slowly than 2 miles an hour. I wanted it to fill, and yet I didn't want it to. I wished the combine would break down. Then I wouldn't have to dump, and the Parkers couldn't get mad. Mick had already dumped twice by the time my bin was filled. I drove over to the semi. I thought about my whole life. There wasn't that much to think about, except that I'd had malaria. I was born in Kansas, and I still lived in Kansas. I went to school. I hated homework. My mother was lenient. My grandmother was strict. I got $3 a week for my allowance. I moved the auger over the grain trailer. Then I turned off the combine and got out to stand on the platform. The auger was over the trailer, but very close to the edge. I got back into the cab, honked twice, and started the engines again. I pulled in the auger, backed up, and moved closer to the semi, feeling a little sick to my stomach about how close I was. I knew that the famous John Deere green color on this combine was polished and perfect, and I didn't want to be the one to scratch it. But when I got out to check, the combine wasn't as close as I had feared. I pushed the auger out button located on the throttle control, and then I pushed one more button on the throttle lever, this one a bit harder to reach so you didn't accidentally hit it and lose the grain while you were driving in the field. A beeper sounded the whole time I was dumping. The beep was to tell the operator that the auger was running. When the controls said that my combine was empty, I pressed the same button. Then I brought the auger back in by pressing the auger return button. I realized I was holding my breath. I exhaled, then inhaled deeply, smelling the beautiful scent of cut wheat. I picked up the radio. "I did it! I dumped my whole load, and it's perfect," I said to Mick excitedly.
"Good girl,"
he answered. "Can you get that wee section near ya? The field is a strange shape, isn't it?" "Got it," I said. 10-4. That was it. I was a combine driver, or maybe a third of one since I went so slowly. I tried to do that math in my head, and for once I could think clearly. Since I went 2 miles an hour and good drivers went 5 miles an hour, that meant I was 40% of a combine driver, more or less. Not bad for a 12-year-old girl.
"Summer,"
I picked up the radio. "Yes?" "I'm going to have to dump at the elevator. They're open late because of the rain this weekend. Do you want to come with me, or are you okay by yourself?" I didn't answer at first. I searched inside myself and decided that my need to keep cutting trumped my fear of being alone.
"Summer?"
"No, I'll be fine working out here." But a minute after he drove off, my heart started to go wompa wompa. I was suddenly terrified out there by myself. I idled the combine and watched as the big rig's taillights disappeared in the distance. I sat very still, then turned off the ignition. I laid my arms on the steering wheel and my face on my arms and pressed my eyes closed. I was so, so scared. I remembered a night several years earlier when I had a dog who was killed by a truck on the highway, and as I held him, I thought I was going to lose my mind. That's kind of the way I felt right then, like everything that was real, the black sky and the stars and the wheat, all started to kind of melt into one another, and the only thing that seemed clear was me and a dog.
Womp. Womp.
"Thunder, help me, I'm scared," I said, looking at him. He lifted his head curiously, then sat up and placed his paw on my leg. I suddenly burst into sobs, and the next thing I knew, I wasn't sobbing because I was scared, but because my grandparents worked so hard, because Jazz couldn't make a friend at school, and because I knew how desperately my parents wished for their own business, and I doubted they would ever get their wish. I squeezed onto the floor and hugged Thunder to me. As I hugged him, something unfamiliar welled up inside of me. Maybe it was courage. I mean, this was my world, the black sky and the stars and the wheat. I knew this world backward and forward and up and down. I got back into my seat and looked around at the wheat. Something started to happen. The dust of my personality started to settle, and my fear left me. In its place was the hyper-super alertness from yesterday. I turned on the ignition and got back to work. When my bin was full, Mick still hadn't returned. I turned off my combine and waited for him. He got back in an hour and called me on the radio.
I'm back. There was a bit of a line at the elevator. Are you full?
Yes.
I'll dump for you.
Why don't you go on back to the motel? I'm thinking of quitting myself.
Do you want me to help you clean the combines?
Nah. Go get your sleep.
Okay, night, I said. And that's when excitement flooded into me. I hadn't made any mistakes today. I wanted to jump up and touch the sky.
I parked the combine where I had found it and walked home. One of my flip-flops broke, so I walked barefoot in the middle of the road to avoid stepping on gravel. I walked exactly in the middle because that somehow made me feel kind of like I was celebrating or in a movie or something. I was so happy. I loved how quiet it was out, how the breeze brushed my face, and how the road felt soft under my feet. Bugs touched my face like snowflakes. When I reached the motel, I snuck into the room. Even Oba-chan seemed to be fast asleep. I changed into a t-shirt without showering, too bad, EPA, and eased myself into bed beside Jazz. Thunder jumped on top of me. An hour went by. I couldn't sleep. I felt wired. I gave up trying to sleep, got my key card, and went to sit outside and look at the stars. Thunder followed me out. I was startled to see Mick sitting on the curb down the way.
You finished cleaning the combines? I asked.
He shook his head no.
I ran out of water.
He held up a couple of bottles of water from the vending machine. He took a swig and said,
You did good tonight. Your grandparents are gonna think I'm Superman when it comes to cutting.
Thank you. He sighed heavily, then looked up toward the stars and sighed again.
When my girl still loved me, she made me a quilt of the constellations. She's handy with a sewing machine.
I didn't reply.
I wanted to marry her.
She doesn't love you anymore? He shook his head again. He seemed really sad and rubbed his palms over his face and into his hair. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know much about that stuff, except for my brief experience with Robbie.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, then. Being on a different continent has taken my mind off her quite a bit.
He stood up and stretched.
I must be finishing my work.
Okay, then good night, I said.
Get some sleep.
I went inside, but I peeked back outside and saw Mick had sat back down. A few thin clouds passed in front of the moon. Soon it would rain. I hoped we would finish the field in time. If we did, it would be because of me, partly. I smiled a little smile and immediately felt guilty about being happy when Mick was so sad. I gently pushed the door shut. I took a few silent steps. A voice came out of the darkness.
You wake me up, Ji-chan said.
I'm sorry, I said. I tried to be quiet.
When sick, not much a difference between asleep and awake.
Are you still really sick?
You use the word really.
He thought a moment.
No, I still sick, but not really.
Little better?
Yes, I think a little better.
I just stepped out for some fresh air. Mick was sitting out there, so we talked a little. I'm sorry I woke you up.
I felt you walk in. No, hear you. That woke me up.
Oba-chan was crying earlier, I blurted out.
She been very sad.
Because of all our bad luck? I asked.
No. Today in the combine, she say you growing up so fast, and she no could stop crying.
I stared at him for a moment. What did that mean? Just then, Oba-chan chuckled in her sleep, no doubt over a dream of America's funniest home videos. She said that was the only thing she ever dreamed of. Then something else about growing up occurred to me. Ji-chan,
Can you be in love when you're only 12? I asked suddenly.
You can be in love, but it's the kind of love that go away, not the kind that stay.
How come it doesn't stay?
Why? You want to get married?
I thought this over. No, I guess not yet. I mean, not for like 20 years. But can't you be in love and not want to get married? I heard him making a small noise in his throat. When he was thinking really hard, sometimes he made a soft, squeaky sound.
Temporary love, very beautiful thing. In Japan, thing that don't last long, tsukanoma. Tsukanoma, very beautiful, like cherry blossom. Perfect.
Ji-chan paused.
Wabi-sabi, beautiful too, in a different way.
Once, Ji-chan had made me watch a BBC show about wabi-sabi that he'd recorded. It's very hard to determine what wabi-sabi is, because supposedly if you could define it, then you knew it couldn't really be wabi-sabi. It's kind of important to what it means to be Japanese, and yet hardly anybody knows exactly what it is. It kind of means that there can be beauty and nobility inside of a rough exterior.
Another thing. When you get married, it's like great Shinto shrine of Ise. It's many hundreds of years old, but for all those hundreds of years, they rebuild it every 20 years. In a temporary love, no rebuilding.
If I tell you something, do you promise not to tell Oba-chan?
I make a solemn promise.
I think I was in temporary love with Robbie Parker.
First time I in love was Akiko. I same age as you.
How long did you stay in love?
5 weeks. I never speak a word to her in life, but I in love.
How come you stopped loving her?
Orchid, interesting flower. Some cherry blossom last only 1 week. Orchid can live many months. She was like cherry blossom.
You mean your love withered away?
No wither. It fall off a tree.
Why did it fall off the tree?
I don't know. Maybe wind blow it off.
Then, just for the nosy heck of it, I asked, do you love Oba-chan?
God put us together. That's bigger than love. I tell you story. Jazz, you listen?
Yep, Jazz answered. You're awake. You tricked me. I didn't trick you. Nobody asked me if I was awake.
Listen to story,
Ji-chan said. He cleared his throat.
One day, my brother and me have many work to do, but we decide to run away for just one day. We get our fishing poles and go to lake. We catch many fish. Nice day, overcast, so we don't get hot. But not cold enough for sweater. Many day my brother and me fight, but this day we like best friend. Then we go home and say, look at all the fish we catch. We excited. But we didn't do our chores that day. My father get a switch and hit our legs until we cry. My brother get hit more than me because he older. Altogether, my brother live almost 70 year. That equal more than 25,000 day. I with him at the bed when he die. He say to me, remember that day we run away and go fishing? I tell him, I remember clearly. Wasn't that day fun? He say. I say yes. And then he die. Oyasumi.
Oyasumi nasai, Ji-chan, Jazz and I said. I cracked the door again and peeked out. I could see Mick still sitting on the curb. I watched him a long time. Then he looked up at something in the distance, and I turned to see what it was. It was a pair of combines driving side by side, their headlights illuminating the night.
He had come across the ocean to drive one of those and forget about a girl he loved. I felt surprised. What I felt surprised about was how beautiful hard work looked. The combines moving slowly in tandem, the moon hanging over the field. It was wabi-sabi. I knew going out to talk to Mick now wouldn't make him feel better. A 12-year-old girl didn't mean a hill of beans to him. I couldn't help. It was just like we couldn't help Jazz to make friends at school, and just like I couldn't change Jensen's life with a simple hello. Still, as my dad liked to say,
you do what you can do.
Maybe I would talk to Jensen again. Maybe I would keep looking for friends for Jazz back home. I got back into bed, and as soon as my head hit the pillow, I knew something. Our year of bad luck had ended. It had begun when I caught malaria, and it had ended here tonight. Maybe I'd known that earlier, and that was why I had walked down the middle of the highway so happily. Anyway, I needed to get some sleep, because I'd have another long night tomorrow. I closed my eyes and saw the header spinning, spinning, spinning.
The Thing About Luck was written by Cynthia Katahata and read by Joy Osmansky. Editing and post-production by Matt Kartsonis. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The Thing About Luck was produced and directed by Matt Kartsonis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Thing About Luck is available in print from Athenaeum. Also by Cynthia Katahata from Simon & Schuster Audio, Half a World Away, read by Kirby Hayborn.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.